Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here's another nice mess you've gotten me into.
And here's a mess these people may get us out of. Welcome to this week's Left Ahead podcast. This is Mike Ball, who blogs at leftahead.com, and Harumpher, which is Harumph. And today I'm expecting the interim director of transportation for Massachusetts, Joshua Ostroff. I have a link to the organization on Left Ahead and at Blog Talk Radio and on my Twitter feed. So it is the numeral, the letter T, the numeral 4, M-A, T-4-M-A, Transportation for Massachusetts. And it is a consortium of, gosh, I think it's over 50 governmental and non-governmental groups that get together to figure out what the best way there is to handle transportation for Massachusetts, which is more than just having a nice highway or a nice subway, but it's the works. And when Josh gets here, we'll talk to him about what that's about and all the things that covers. And transportation equity, which is a huge thing, getting ordinary people from where they can afford to live to where they work, which sounds, well, everybody does that. No, they don't. here is, I live near the Fairmount line, which is a legend in the transportation world. Years ago, it must be, I think it was 7 years ago, they had the International Rail Evolution Conference here. I see Josh here, but he's not connecting yet. And here, everybody else in the world knew about the Boston as a place that did it right, as they said. Josh, you're on?
Yes, I'm on. Hello, thanks, Josh, for unmuting me. How
great,
are you?
No, Blog Talk Radio has been misbehaving badly today, and it didn't want to connect. Anyway, so I was just going through the thing about saying on the Fairmount line and all these people at the Rail Evolution Conference said, gosh, you people in Boston sure know how to do it. You know, and I said, what? What are you talking about? And it was the thing about all the people along the line tend to be middle class and poor, and they were black and Latino, and they watched the trains go over and over, and they didn't stop. And the CDCs, the Community Development Centers, and similar groups got together and changed that. It took them 20 years to get that done, but they went to everybody from the feds to the state to the city and private, and they got it all done. And apparently that's what it took. So I was telling people that you have this large group of non-government and government group people who are getting together to get some transportation equity. So I guess you should probably describe the way you do it. I do have links on all of my sites to T4MA, but you can say why. I maybe we should start. If there is a state transportation department and all these other people, why is T4MA doing anything?
Well, thanks, first of all, for having me on today. I'm always delighted to talk about transportation, and this is an important topic because it's what enables us to get to work, to school, to live fulfilling lives, and to do so in a way that provides opportunity to everybody. So transportation for Massachusetts, my elevator speech is that, and a short elevator, is that we are a statewide coalition supporting excellence in transportation throughout the entire Commonwealth, because we want to make sure we've got social equity where everyone has access to opportunity through transportation, and that we've got a climate-friendly transportation network. Because transportation is now the largest source of greenhouse gas emissions, we need to have clean transportation choices that work for everybody in order to preserve the environment that we depend on. So we are 58 different organizations from the Berkshires to Boston, the South Coast, and the North Shore that work together to affect good transportation policy, to make sure that we have good transit options, that we can bike and walk safely, and that our roads and bridges are in a better state of repair. So we've come together about 6 years ago, and we were formed to help fight back the efforts to cut MBTA service and raise fares. We were successful in that, in reducing the proposed fare increases. We helped to pass the legislation in 2013 that for the first time provided significant new funding for transportation. We fought unsuccessfully to limit MBTA fare increases this year and to increase regional transit authority funding. But we've had some good successes in complete streets, which are making neighborhood streets better for everybody, and in seeing good policy come into place. So things take a long time to happen in Massachusetts, but that's really the scope of our focus. And we include, as you mentioned, some government agencies like regional planning agencies, but we have many other nonprofit, transportation, environmental, public health, and community-based organizations that are our members. So we all work together to try to row the transportation boat forward.
Yeah, and we should stress, I know people have caught when we're, you passed it because you covered, the broad brush of that range of things, but it is more than highways and trains. And there's a lot going on in there, and it includes the bicycling and the structuring for pedestrians and everything from where people live to where they work and where they have recreation, and it's the entire work. And you point out in your literature that you have that much of the economy in Massachusetts depends on that, not only the workers but the people who put the companies and get them to where people can get to them.
That's right. We're here for, the low-wage worker that needs to get to a shift at a restaurant at 5 in the morning, and for the high-tech worker that prefers to walk or bike or take transit. We see a shift away from car culture and towards more sustainable modes of transportation, but that's actually the way the world is going. And, leading cities across the U.S. and the world are investing heavily in friendlier transportation systems, not just expanding highways and building new interchanges, because that's absolutely not the solution for tomorrow.
Yeah, because people are not into the subject. They don't seem to realize that if you put four more lanes on the highway, it just makes a lot more cars. I mean, people they just can't help themselves. They just have to, it's one of those vacuums they just have to fill with more and more and more cars, which brings the noise.
Inevitably,
and
yeah. Right. Transportation planners call that induced demand. And basically, if you build it, people will drive. And if you add more capacity, it will quickly fill up because cars, always seek, asphalt. So we can't really build our way out of congestion. We certainly can't build our way out of climate change with more highways. So we'll need to be very thoughtful. But one of the things that actually our coalition did is we advocated successfully back in 2013 for a concept called project selection criteria. That's a wonky expression, but what it means is that when we build transportation projects in the future, we won't just go for how can we spend the most money on the most asphalt. We're going to look at public health and social justice and environmental sustainability and regional equity and make sure that throughout the state that the projects that get funded are the ones that will actually do the most good, not just benefit the most cars. So that's actually a change that we saw in the recent transportation capital investment plan, where a lot of advocates for truckers and roadway construction people were upset that we didn't spend more money on widening roads. So I guess it's a step forward. We certainly need to keep our roads in better shape, but we don't need to make them wider and encourage more car traffic.
Yeah, could you talk a little bit more about the equity aspect of it? I mean, that's the thing. And I was at your recent conference, and a number of those people there were saying, I have been here for 35 years, and I can tell you what it is. And basically the poor people can't get to work, and we don't have 24-hour subways, and we don't, on and on and on. They were just saying it isn't fair to the people who don't have a car with three-car garage.
We have a very unjust transportation system in this country and in this state. We're working to reform that, but that's a critical issue. And when you have a system where, fares go up and service goes down or service is unreliable, this really affects people who don't have choices. Too many people in Boston depend on unreliable buses. We need newer buses, better maintained. We need another garage to maintain them in the city of Boston. And we need to improve our routes and services so that they can help people who actually need help. You know, shiny new stations is great, but I think what most transit riders look for is a bus that comes when it's supposed to, doesn't break down on the way. So for us, transportation equity is important, and not just in the city. There are places in, you know, central and western Massachusetts where people really depend on public transit because they don't have cars, which are very expensive to maintain. And if you don't have night service to a community college in the Berkshires, you can't go to school. So we need to make sure that we fix those problems as well as serving people in the transit, you know, deserts within the city of Boston. Your readers may have seen a letter to the editor that our social justice policy corner, Hakeem Cunningham, wrote in the Globe recently, which I think is what prompted our conversation, Mike.
Yes.
Because, you know, Mattapan is a great example of a neighborhood that is underserved by transit. So the people that live there actually have relatively few options to get to school and work. So what we are advocating for is to have more frequency of service, to have improvements to service such as the Fairmount line that you mentioned earlier, and to make sure that the investments that go into the MBTA actually do benefit lower income communities and communities of color, because we can't simply just, you know, reward the suburbs. As much as I like, you know, good commuter rail service and I take the train every day, that is not the complete system. You know, the complete system needs better buses and up-to-date trains and stations and fully accessible systems as well for people with disabilities.
I got to say,
go ahead.
No, go ahead. You finish your thought.
The other thing you, I think, were referring to is an event we had, a community forum a couple of weeks ago on how transportation is changing and how that needs to engage with people in our neighborhoods throughout the cities. When we look at services like Uber and Lyft or autonomous vehicles, we see systems that tend to benefit people with higher incomes the most. And as transportation changes and we have new ways of getting around, it's critical that we not further disadvantage people for whom the city bus is a lifeline. So we need to make sure that, you know, everything from Hubway and Zipcar and Lyft and Uber are in Roxbury and Dorchester and Mattapan and every community in Chelsea, you know, throughout Boston, that is going to benefit people who really do need good transportation choices, and not see privatization as somehow a way that's going to, you know, make some companies rich, but not necessarily give all people access to good transportation.
Yeah, I got a little bit of a laugh when I was at that conference, at that forum, when I was in a breakout session, and there were eight of us, and seven of the people lived in the middle of Boston and had no car, had no intention of ever having a car. They hated cars, and they were appalled that I had one. And I live on Fairmont Hill, and I need one car. We have one car for our family of four people. But anyway, we do that. But for many years, I worked in the high-tech industry, mostly in Burlington, and I lived in Jamaica Plain. And basically, there was no way to get from Jamaica Plain to Burlington at a reason, and get to work without a car. And it bothered me because I tried the bus thing, and it was 3.5 hours to take three buses to get there. And I did a bike, but it was close to 2 hours, and it was on a very dangerous road, Lowell Street. And I would have loved to have done that by mass transit, but there was no mass transit to where the high-tech industry were. Anyway.
Right. Well, that's why GE is locating in the city. They're moving from their suburban campus in Connecticut to a downtown location because their workforce wants to be able to get there by public transit, and companies can't even get the workforce they need if they're located on 128 and they want to hire an engineer who's graduated from college, you know, in recent years. They're not going to get the talent they want if people are forced to drive. I want to take a moment and push an event that we're having on October 14th at District Hall. It's a continuation of the event that you went to on transforming mobility. This is called Fast Forward, and it's about how our technology revolution is revolutionizing transportation and what it means for the entire state. So picking up on the theme of how do we make sure that autonomous vehicles serve people in the inner city, that Uber and Lyft are accessible to all, that we can make sure that, you know, the next time there's a hubway rollout that, you know, inner city neighborhoods with a lower income are not, you know, waiting years for that service. So how do we really make sure that the sharing economy does benefit everybody? So we are looking forward to this event. You can find out about it at our website, t4ma.org/fastforward. And we hope to see people there. It's very inexpensively priced, and we've got scholarships for people who can't afford to pay a modest amount to attend. So that's our approach, though, is to really bring people together, get folks who have been thinking hard about transportation over the years from MassPerg, from the Conservation Law Foundation, from Metropolitan Area Planning Council, Frontier Group, people that we work with all the time who are really, you know, smarter than I am about transportation, and getting them together to actually generate policy that's in the public interest.
And we've got to talk a bit about more about our infrastructure, because there was the, you know, it was not too long ago that the bridges were literally falling apart. There's one in Connecticut where a whole bunch of cars went into the river because the bridges collapsed. And Massachusetts is not all that bad, although there are over, I think it's over 1,000 bridges that are in terrific need of repair in Massachusetts. And you know, there's other infrastructure work that needs to be done.
Right. The we don't nearly have the funding available through our public agencies to keep all of our roads and bridges in a state of good repair. For example, local cities and towns, whether it's, you know, Boston or Pittsfield or any place in between, they don't get nearly the funding that they need to keep roads from crumbling. So roads typically get worse at the level that we're spending. We do have hundreds of bridges that are structurally deficient, a couple of dozen that are closed. And there's just not enough money in the pipeline to get them all built. I will say, though, that it's not just a matter of money. Our governor, Governor Baker, has made reform a big focus. And I think that's appropriate because you need agencies that actually have the staff, the capacity to spend money in a timely manner and make sure it's done efficiently. You know, the MBTA's procurement system is decades old, and MassDOT takes too long to review projects because they don't have the right staff in place to move projects along quickly. So this is a big challenge that we have. More money is important, but it's not the entire answer. You know, reform is essential, but that's not the entire answer. Yeah, we really need both. So I'm hopeful that as MassDOT and the MBTA in the years to come, that they will earn the confidence of the public and of legislators so we can get the additional revenue they need, which could come as early as 2018 with a constitutional amendment to fund transportation and education. Is that news to you and your listeners, or?
It'll be to some of the listeners. It's an area that I follow, and I'm also big on bicycling. I want that. Obviously, that doesn't work for a lot of places. You really aren't going to bicycle commonly from Boston to the Berkshires, although some people do that as recreation. But, I mean, in the urban areas, in your, you know, Boston, Worcester, Lowell, and so forth, you can bike quite a bit. And I'd like it to be safer. My wife won't bike on the street with me because she's just thinking, they're crazy people out there. They will run you over. And that's so much worse. I've been hit a couple of times, so I can go for that.
Ouch.
But I would like there to be people more encouraged to bike, but I think that's going to happen when we have that, you know, sweet spot that Nicole Freeman used to talk about, where there's enough people out there that everybody's always aware their bicycle is on the road and that they drive that way. But that happens when people feel secure. And when that happens, of course, you see the other side of it, which is, you know, less pollution, less noise, less congestion, all the good lessons, But it all has to come, you know, in a group. So I see a number of the components of your coalition are involved in cycling as well, which is heartening to me.
That's right. Well, and less preventable disease. Our public health advocates, whether it's Walk Boston or the Mass Public Health Association, Mass Bike, the Boston Cyclists Union, all understand that our sedentary modes of travel, just getting in your car and driving to a mall or an office park, actually leads to preventable disease. So we need to have a more thoughtful approach to spending on transportation in a way that encourages people to bike and walk safely. Boston doesn't have the wide streets that many other communities or regions do, so that they can put in dedicated bike lanes without some kind of sacrifice, but we're getting there. In fact, some of our members and many other advocates worked really hard to persuade the city of Boston to have protected bike lanes on Commonwealth Avenue, which is just one of the most treacherous places to ride. I mean, I've been, you know, living near there for much of my life, or walking, taking transit, or biking or driving, and it is clearly a road that needs better cycling infrastructure. So, you know, in the years to come when that is built out, I think that will be a good example and show how if we can do it on Com Ave, we can do it almost anywhere. And the city of Boston is actually exploring more cycle tracks, which other cities do. If you have the opportunity to ride in, say, you know, Toronto or, you know, other cities in Canada or in Europe,
yeah,
or
even places
city,
in New York, there's some structures of New York have pretty good cycle tracks.
That's right. Yep. No, it's critical. I mean, I love riding on rail trails, but they don't always get you where you need to go. And we need to look at transportation as not a hobby, not something you just do on vacation, but something you do every day. You know, we've got a staffer who commutes to our co-working office space in downtown Boston by bike, and this building has indoor protected bike parking and, you know, the kind of amenities you need for people to take it seriously.
Gosh, who was
so
that? One of the state transportation, the head of the Department of Transportation there for years came in from like Dover or someplace every day on the bike. I remember what his name was, but he was amazingly fit, but he rode to and from every day, even in the snow.
That's ambitious.
He was a good example. Yeah.
Yep. Well, you know, that's where we need to go. The number of people that bike to work in Kendall Square, for example, it's phenomenally large and as well as should be. That's a good example of a workforce that looks at cycling as almost a default for how they would get to work. And as we do more investment in the Seaport area in South Boston near downtown, we're going to need more cycling infrastructure there as well, because it's not well served by public transit. That's very expensive to build the kinds of, you know, rapid transit lines that new area needs. But cycling is a great way to encourage people at relatively little expense. You add a lot more capacity to your roadway network. So, and there the roads typically are wide enough to accommodate it without, you know, losing much in the way of travel lanes or parking.
Well, even the attitude that made a difference. I had both cycling czars for Cambridge and Boston on this show a couple times, and the differences between Boston and Cambridge were phenomenal, or at least until Tom Menino got religion, because he was very much against bicycles for years and years and years, and then all of a sudden, you know, a couple of city councilors changed his mind, and, you know, he got on the bicycle himself. And it made a big difference. So I haven't seen Marty Walsh on a bike, but he seems to be vaguely in favor of bicycling.
Oh, he is. He's very supportive and looks at it as a completely legit. I mean, he's got a chief of streets. He's got he has a bicycle pedestrian advocates on the payroll who work hard to actually make a difference. I saw several of them today. In fact, there is a pop-up park that was done as a test in downtown Boston on Franklin Street near the corner of Arch, where downtown business district and the city collaborated to reclaim the stretch of street that was not being widely used for cars and trucks. So it became a the park for a few hours. That's one example of how we can think creatively about our urban infrastructure to make it work better for everybody, particularly in a place where there's just not enough place to just relax and enjoy the outdoors. We're not at the point where we have conflicts between bike lanes and so-called parklets. I wouldn't want to be in the middle of that fight.
Yeah, one of my eldest son moved to Seattle, where they do. Actually, that's where Nicole Friedman ended up, and she's doing her bike and mass transit thing over there too, and the same thing. But Seattle's a little bit more exciting because I thought San Francisco was full of hills. It has nothing to do with hills like Seattle does. It's amazing, but it's the bicyclists there are amazingly fit because there are so many damn hills in Seattle. But everybody bicycles around there. It's just it's so much easier than trying to find a place to park a car. They really really enjoy it there.
Well, Seattle is a good example of a city. I guess both our sons live in Seattle, but that where they're also investing in transit. There's a new light rail extension to Capitol Hill, where you can get to the University of Washington or the airport much more conveniently than in the past.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of...
Very close to my son. Yeah, he was very happy to see that because he used to go down to the Westgate, and he was just so happy to see that one come in there because he can walk to that one easily and walk his kids to it too. So it's a great place. Well, as soon as we get to Seattle, we never bother them for transit. We always take the light rail and then just hoof it over their house. So it's we think they understand how to do light rail in Seattle.
Well, they also understand that the way you pay for transit can be much more convenient. Seattle has this thing called the ORCA, One Regional Card for All Modes.
Yeah.
So you can use it for any bus, any subway, the light rail and so forth, and makes it much more convenient, less confusing. In Boston, we still have a bit of a mishmash of payment systems for all of our transit. But I know the T is working on that. That's one of the issues that new managers at the MBTA are focusing on, is how to make it friendlier for people to pay and use.
I can start by doing letting the conductors on the rail take Charlie cards. That would be a good start to begin with.
I think so.
All right. Well, I'll point people to your conference and certainly to your organization. I'd like people to get involved, and we should probably talk again, and maybe Hakeem can come on and chat more about the social equity part of it, because that's a big part of it. But I think it's been a good introduction, and I can remind people it's been like a year or so since I did a transit show, and it's been time. So we remind people, and also I think people should take a look at your legislative recap that you sent out at the end of August or like a week and a half ago. Point out, it lists some of those things you talk about and some of the other things. But you guys have been really busy protecting us, and we appreciate that.
Well, we're happy to do it, and more hands make light work. So if folks want to just sign up at t4ma.org, you'll get on our mailing list. We won't overburden you. We want to engage with people all across the state on how they can make a difference in improving transportation in their daily lives. So we're really always glad to engage with folks. And I appreciate the opportunity to spend a few minutes with you today, Mike.
Thank you for coming on, Josh. Great. Good afternoon.
Thanks. Talk to you soon.
Bye.